Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball news and discussion, brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Join me live at assemblycall.com every Thursday night and immediately following every IU game for our live IU postgame show. And visit insidethehall.com for complete coverage of IU basketball and to join the discussion in the Inside the Hall premium forum.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink. And this week we have a special guest. He is joining us for the first time, and I counted it up, 105 days. He is back. Jared Morris, welcome back to Podcast on the Brink.
A special guest. It's so strange being a special guest on Podcast on the Brink. I didn't realize it had been since 2014. Man, that's a long time. Yeah. That's a long time. Yeah.
We were talking before the show, the first episode that Jared hosted as the host of Podcast on the Brink was actually the 2013-14 season in February, early February, and it was Jared the host, I was a guest, and Chronic Hoosier, and we started off talking about whether or not Indiana needed to win games against Penn State and Purdue to make the tournament, so...
Yeah.
And now we're year four into Archie Miller's tenure in Bloomington, and we're
having similar discussions
when they're going to make the tournament now. So yeah, we've kind of come full circle here. So Jared, what, you know, I haven't mentioned much, you know, we've gone to the every other week episodes right now because there's not been a lot of content in terms of just, you know, there's been no game since March. And
yeah,
I have had a couple of people ask me, you know, if you were still doing the show or whatever, and I know you've had some things, you know, going on or whatever, but you want to just talk a little bit about where you've been the last 105 days and kind of what the plan hopefully is for the show going forward, you know, maybe when we do get basketball back.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been in the same place that I had been before, in the same place that most people are, which is at home. There have just been some different demands on my time that really for the first time since 2014, when we started doing the show together, has really made it so that Indiana basketball has just kind of had to fall down my priority list a little bit. You know, we got great news that my wife is pregnant, number one, which is awesome. And so that, you know, has kind of shifted the priorities around a little bit as we get prepped for that. And she's working from home too, and my daughter's at home. And so some of the time that I used to have by myself for us to be able to record during the day just hasn't been there. And so scheduling was a little bit more difficult. And two of the projects that I've been working on that, you know, were kind of side projects have really kind of taken off. One is a project called Thinker's Notebook, which is a notebook for thinkers, for people who like taking notes with pen and paper. And we're actually getting ready to release an app next week, the Thinker's app. So we've been putting a lot of work into that. And then I'm also leading a community of solopreneurs and freelancers at the Unemployable Initiative, which is, you can learn more about it, unemployable.com. So those two projects, they both kind of accelerated at the same time. And so I just kind of had to choose what the priority was, you know, and with another little one on the way and both of those projects really having a lot of potential, I just had to focus on those. And I, you know, feel really fortunate during this time when a lot of people are out of work and, you know, don't have the opportunities. I feel really fortunate to have both those opportunities. And so I wanted to kind of go at them full force. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, Indiana basketball just had to take a little more of a back seat. And we were talking of, you know, probably only hosted the Assembly Call two or three times since then too. You know, fortunately, you know, you and, you know, on Podcast on the Brink stepping up and picking up the slack, and Ryan and Coach and Andy over there picking up the slack. I really appreciate it. So, yeah, I'm like everybody else. I can't wait for games to start, and hopefully things will change a little bit, you know, by then to be able to kind of focus on games as before. But, you know, right now it's just a little shift in priorities. So, you know, having to put the family first, and you know, but we'll kind of see what happens in the next couple months. It's kind of difficult to predict right now.
Yeah, I felt honored that you trusted me to host the show. We've had some speed bumps, I guess, in terms of trying to. I know recently you tried to help me a little bit in terms of how to edit the show and things like that on a weekly basis. But like I said, we're going to continue on with kind of the every other week schedule for now until we like firm up at least when the start of the season may be, what it might look like. And then, you know, we'll try to get you on from time to time whenever your schedule allows, but definitely want to continue the show and keep things going. And you know, we were talking a little bit before that I was going to kind of turn this around on you. I know you usually are the host and you ask me questions. So we're going to do this a little different since I've been hosting now by myself since May. I've kind of, you know, got a better feel for how this kind of how this role works. And so I just wanted to start off by asking you, I mean, there's been a lot happen with IU basketball since we last had an episode. Bruiser Flint is gone to Kentucky. Kenya Hunter is the new assistant coach.
Yeah.
As recently as yesterday, we heard news that Indiana's shut down workouts indefinitely as a result of positive COVID-19 tests. We've also learned that there's a potential start date now for college basketball, November 25th. It's going to be voted on later this month. I mean, what I know you're kind of watching this from afar and maybe not keeping up with the day-to-day nuts and bolts as much as you once did, but you know, where are you in terms of your confidence level that we're going to have college basketball next season?
Definitely a lot more confident now than I was 4 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago. You know, obviously the fiasco with Big Ten football, I don't think gave a lot of people confidence, but it seems like things have settled down there and who knows what will happen with football. But it feels like the impact of that situation was, hey, let's not wait until the last minute here and let's actually get a plan and put some things together. And so it seems like maybe college basketball is benefiting a little bit from watching, you know, college football stumble over itself a little bit as they, you know, kind of try to make their way back. So I feel, you know, I feel a lot better about it now, you know. At the same time, you know, you're seeing schools have to cancel workouts. You're seeing breakouts at all these different universities. So it's tough to know. But given the fact that it seems like there are dates, and you know, I saw in The Athletic, I think Seth Davis and Dana O'Neill had a piece that, you know, where they quoted someone from the Maui Invitational saying they were looking at alternate, you know, venues to possibly have that. Like it feels like there's some plans in place and some things kind of moving in that direction. And that makes me feel better about it. But I think like everybody, I'll be cautious until I see, you know, the ball tipped. And the other thing is, you know, the NBA action has obviously been great and they've really shown that the bubble can work. And so I think, you know, you look at, you know, you're seeing like high level basketball be played there and you're seeing a model for it to work. Now, I don't know how much you can apply what the NBA is doing to college athletes. I guess we're going to find out. But there are definitely more positive signs now than there were a few weeks ago, but still enough negative signs that, you know, I'm uncertain about it, like I think everybody is.
Yeah, the thing with the bubble, and I've, you know, talked about this in the past when we had Jeff Goodman on, we talked a lot about just kind of how everybody would be watching to see how it worked out. And it's been surprising to me just to see how, you know, at the beginning, you know, there was maybe a few hiccups, and I'm not talking about kind of the stoppage in play. I'm just talking about the whole infrastructure of the bubble and the fact that they've really not had any positive tests since everyone got there and quarantined. My whole issue with kind of taking that and applying it to college basketball is that the NBA spent $180 million. That was the last reported figure that I heard from Mark Stein. He was on a podcast recently talking about it. $180 million to do this in at Disney World. I don't know that there's $180 million in the Big Ten's budget or any other conference or the NCAA's budget to host them like this. Maybe for the
tournament. The SEC's under the table recruiting budget.
Well, exactly. But, you know, while we can talk about maybe looking at something like the basketball tournament that went in July in Columbus, maybe that's maybe a more realistic type of model what we're looking at. But I don't know that we're going to be able to have something that's apples to apples with the NBA bubble for college basketball because, you know, you've got 300 some teams, you've got some conferences that are going to be able to spend a lot more on testing and different things than others. Whereas in the NBA, it's everybody's kind of under that same umbrella and the protocols are all the same. And
yeah, I feel like the only way it would work is like maybe a conference trying to do a mini bubble for a short period of time, or possibly, you know, a tournament you know, whether it's, you know, like a conference tournament, even one of the preseason tournaments or the NCAA tournament, possibly like, hey, okay, you know, we're going to get these teams together and maybe, you know, they kind of condense the schedule a little bit, although probably not for, for TV purposes. But that's the only way I could see it working, is kind of in a micro sense like that. Certainly nothing on a macro sense would work.
What did you make of Bruiser Flynn's departure and the hiring of Kenya Hunter? I know we've traded texts a little bit on that. But to me, and I've talked about this a little bit, I felt it was an upgrade potentially for Indiana in terms of what they may get from the recruiting aspect of it. To me, Bruiser Flint, everyone I've talked to about him has had nothing but good things to say about him as a person and as a coach. But the reality is, college basketball, in many ways, is about getting players. And you look at the results in terms of a recruiting aspect from Bruiser Flint, and really the only two guys that I can point to that he was the main recruiter on, Jordan Geronimo, who we've yet to see suit up for Indiana, and Jake Forrester, who was basically a guy that played for 1 year and left. I know he did a little work on Rob Phinisee and Demise Anderson, but Indiana's got to get more, I feel like, out of the assistant coaches from a recruiting aspect. It can't be Archie Miller and Tom Ostrom solely carrying that load. So I look at it as a potential upgrade. Do you kind of share that sentiment, and are you optimistic that Kenya Hunter is going to be able to kind of help Indiana in that regard?
I think in the moment it happened, I certainly felt like it made sense for Bruiser Flint. I mean, you get a chance to go to Kentucky, which, look, you know, we all want to be better than Kentucky, but I think the states of the programs right now are just in two different spots, and Kentucky's at a higher level than Indiana right now. And he gets to go with John Calipari, you know, the guy that he played for in college, and so it made all the sense in the world for him to move. And so, you know, when you see something like that happen, and it kind of happens at a weird time in a normal calendar, and then, you know, you add in it's a pandemic and all the complications that brings up, you know, I was a little bit nervous, only because, you know, to me, one of the advantages that Indiana has going into this season is, you know, a lot of the same players back, a lot of continuity. And so with so much upheaval and the way that teams are having to work together this offseason, you know, I really felt like the fact that, you know, I mean, obviously you got a recruiting class coming in, but so many key guys back from last year, I felt like that cohesion would be a benefit. And so, you know, how would losing an assistant coach and not knowing who they could get play into that? But then once the hire was announced and you looked into Kenya Hunter's background, you read the things that people said about him, you kind of sat down and thought about, okay, what does Indiana really need from an assistant coach from this position? I agree with you. I think it's pretty easy to make an argument that it's an upgrade. Now, who knows? You know, I mean, we've got to actually see it play out. Everybody was excited when Ed Schilling and Bruiser Flint were named as assistant coaches. And, you know, maybe those didn't work out as well as we thought, you know, and people were excited about Mike Roberts, but we don't really know what kind of impact he's had on the floor yet. So, I mean, it's hard to judge assistant coaches, I guess, is my point. And yet, you know, having grown up the son of an assistant football coach at Indiana, I understand how important they are. The huge role. It's just really hard for fans to understand the impact that they're making, because so much of it goes on behind the scenes. But man, when you start reading the stuff that people say about Kenya Hunter, I mean, I was not expecting it, frankly. I mean, it's just tons of praise, and not, I think it's easy to look at that hire and say, okay, they brought in a guy for recruiting. And yet when you look at what people say about him, he really seems like a well-rounded coach, like a guy who's been involved in player development, a guy that a lot of, you know, the national college basketball guys peg as a future head coach, a guy that seems to have a lot of energy, is still kind of on his way up and trying to make his name in coaching, as opposed to a guy like Bruiser, who has, you know, kind of had a big job and maybe is just at a different stage of his career. So we're going to see. And the other thing, too, is he's got a history with Archie Miller. So going back to the continuity thing, I think that obviously is going to help, that you're not just bringing in a guy where they have to actually build a relationship. They have one. So the more I looked at it, the more optimistic I was about it. And if he can deliver some recruits, and obviously there's been a slew of offers that have gone out to guys that he had already been involved with, you know, whether or not that interest transfers to Indiana, we'll see. And it's kind of been a, you know, it's starting to become a running joke, I think, among IU fans, how much we're like second or third or fourth with all these East Coast recruits, but then losing to Villanova or losing to other ones. It's like, okay, we're going to get one of these four or five star guys. So I think eventually you got to actually land one of those guys for all the time and effort to be worth it. But I think I don't know what you would want from him to be more excited about the hire. He seems to check all the boxes. So now we'll see what happens with it, but it seems like a good
the other
hire.
Thing I would say is you look at the timing of when it happened. And I know we're in a kind of a uncertain time in terms of the season getting started and practice getting started. But in a lot of cases, if a program had a coach leave in late August, early September, right before the season was going to start, that could be potentially disastrous because you're right in the thick of things in terms of recruiting. You know, this is usually the time of year where you have visits and things like that. And those things are still going on. It's just going on virtually. And you could have been left in a situation where you don't really have anywhere to go in terms of getting somebody. Usually this time of year, all the coaching moves have already happened. And so for Indiana to be able to go out and get a coach from UConn, that's, you know, a pretty successful, well-known program. And based on the relationship, I think a lot with Archie Miller, as you mentioned, with Kenya Hunter, just to be able to pry him away at this point in time, I think was a major deal. We'll see how it works out, but ultimately, I think just based on the circumstances and everything we know, it was just about as well of as good of a job as Indiana could have done in terms of the hire.
Yeah.
There's been obviously a lot written this offseason about different players in the program and kind of what, you know, I wrote a piece about Trace Jackson Davis and how he kind of needs to embrace the role of being the man next season. There's been things written about Christian Lander, how he's going to handle the pressure of being this five-star point guard from the state of Indiana, where Indiana needs help at that position. Rob Phinisee, how does he adjust to playing alongside of Christian Lander? Jerome Hunter, how does he, in the second season of college basketball, what step forward does he take? When you kind of look at the roster as a whole, are there one or two guys that you point to and say, if this is going to be the year, and this is all caveated with there is a season and we're all crossing our fingers that there will be, but are there one or two guys that you look at and say, for Indiana to reach its potential as a team and be, you know, a top four or five team in the Big Ten, these are the guys that I think really need to either, you know, assert themselves more, or is there one or two guys that you looked at as X factors for next season?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the obvious answer, given the depth that I think the Big Ten is going to have and some of the guys that are returning, is that pretty much all the guys that you named are going to have to take a step forward for Indiana to be able to compete at that level. But to narrow it down, and it's interesting that you asked that because I've been thinking about this a lot, and the guys talked about this on Assembly Call Radio last week, you know, if you start looking at who's the most indispensable players on the roster, Trace is obviously the first one, you know, and he, as you said, he's got to embrace being a go-to guy. I felt like he did toward the end of last season, you know, but he can't have the disappearing games on the road. Indiana will get killed if he does that. You know, he is the centerpiece. He has to be the star. I think if Indiana is going to compete for a Big Ten championship, be the type of team that can make a trip into the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, be a top 25 team, which are all fair expectations for a coach's fourth season and for a roster with this talent, he's going to have to play at an All-American level. You know, maybe he's not a first-team All-American, but he's a third-team or honorable mention type guy. That just has to happen. But that's obvious. I think the conversation gets really interesting when you start looking at, for this year, this roster, you know, who's the next most indispensable player? And I started thinking about it when I saw the Lindy's cover that Al Durham was on the cover of. Because, you know, I think when you look at just the way that the roster is constructed and the different ways that this team is going to play and the different things that they're going to need to put around Trace Jackson Davis, and given the struggles that this program has had with shooting, you know, Al Durham comes into his senior season as a guy that has really improved every year. He's obviously going to be the captain. Like, he's going to be the leader. He's the guy who's been through the battles. That experience is going to be huge. I thought we really started to see toward the end of last season, in the Michigan State game, in the game at Illinois, him growing into the role of being a go-to guy, where when a big shot was needed, he wanted the ball. And Archie had enough confidence in him to, like, run plays for him, you know? And so I think he really emerged last season in that role. He became a better three-point shooter, up to 38-some%. And he got, you know, he got away in his sophomore year, and I think part of it was just trying to fit in alongside Romeo. He got away from getting to the basket. And last year, he was back to driving to the basket again. He was second in the league in free throw rate, which I think is probably, you could probably win a lot of bar bets, you know, asking people who was second in the league in free throw rate. which shows that his aggressiveness was back and he was actually getting a fair whistle from the refs, which he didn't get his first 2 years. So when you look at his ability to make shots from the outside better than anybody else, his ability to attack the basket better than anybody else, you know, I mean, we haven't seen Lander play any of those things, but I don't think he's going to have the strength and, you know, to get to the lane and be successful like Al. What Al brings offensively, you can't really replace it. When you look, you know, like Rob Finney would be, he needs to play well and he'd be an easy answer for second most indispensable. And yet, you know, you've got a five-star in Lander who could take the ball. Now, you don't really have a guy that can replace Rob on the defensive end. But with what Al brings offensively and what you're going to need to surround Trace with to make Trace as good as possible, I've actually had a hard time talking myself out of Al Durham being the second most indispensable player because of the experience and what he brings offensively. Now, I think, and defensively, even though he struggles, he's the one guy with 3 years of experience in the pack line to help bring the other guys around. And so given all those things and just, you know, again, I think what's going to be important with continuity and leadership in a weird season, I really think Al can't be a complimentary piece. He's got to be. Archie had this phrase he used to always use his first and second season. He would talk about responsibility for production. You know, Juwan Morgan has a responsibility for production. Well, Al has that now. And he has also been a guy who has at times kind of shied away from asserting himself in games, you know, or just kind of disappeared a little bit in games. And I just don't think he can do that. Like, I think he's got to be a 12, 13 point a game guy. He's got to look for his shot. He's got to get to the basket. And I think if he does that, now you've got Trace down low. You know you've got Al that you can count on to take and make shots and also be a guy who can get to the basket. Now you make the jobs of Rob Finney and Christian Lander and Jerome Hunter and Race Thompson, Armon Franklin a lot easier because they can fit in around that. But if you're missing your anchor down low and if you're missing your best outside threat, it's just going to mess up the entire balance. So, you know, and I think you could go down the roster. I mean, you could talk about what Lander needs to do. Obviously, Jerome Hunter and Race Thompson are huge, and those guys are going to have to be big. But the more I think about this team and what has to happen for them to be good, I think Al Durham has got to emerge as a guy as a senior who is consistent. And he became more of that guy toward the end of last season. That's why I have a lot more faith that he'll be able to do it as a senior.
Another thing we've written and talked about a lot this offseason, and I don't think I had a chance to talk to you about it, is, you know, Archie Miller and Rob Finney brought up, you know, kind of some tweaks to the offense potentially when they had the Zoom availability in late July. And one thing that a lot of fans are curious to see is how lineups change now that Justin Smith is kind of no longer in the mix. And obviously Justin Smith had his positives, but to me, the real negative that he brought was when you played him at the three, a lot of times last year you had three guys on the floor and him, Trace Jackson Davis and Joey Brunk that couldn't shoot from outside of, you know, 5 or 7 feet. So you didn't get the spacing that you need. How do you think Indiana is going to go about constructing lineups this season? Do you think it's going to be a situation where you're going with three guards and then maybe Jerome Hunter at the four and then one big on the floor? Do you see more of what we saw last year, or maybe Jerome Hunter just fills in for Justin Smith and you hope that Jerome Hunter can make threes and that gives you a different look? I'm just curious kind of your thoughts on how this balance will be struck and what you think maybe makes most sense from a lineup construction perspective.
Some of it is going to depend on matchups, you know, because there are going to be some matchups where you're going to need Joey Brunk to play alongside Trace Jackson Davis, especially early in the game, to maybe take some defensive pressure off of Trace because you can't get him in foul trouble given how much he means. But, you know, now you got to fit Race Thompson and Jerome Hunter in there. So I think a big part of the answer to this question is how good and how healthy is Jerome Hunter? Because he has the talent and the ability to make it to where you're writing his name in the lineup in pen and you're fitting guys around him. Now, he wasn't that guy last year. You know, he wasn't ready to be that guy. And I don't know if he will be this year. I'm not anticipating it. You know, so I think that you'll see some mixing and matching with him and with, you know, and with Race. And you'll probably see them play together some. But man, when you look at what Indiana is going to be able to have with Rob Finney, Christian Lander, Al Durham, and Armon Franklin, both in terms of the offensive versatility that they're going to give you and defensively what they can give you, and how much Archie has just wanted to play faster and play with guards who can actually create and do things offensively, I think as the season goes along, it's going to be really hard for him, a point guard at heart, to not play three guards with what that's going to bring. I just think that's going to, you know, and the other thing is because, you know, the fourth guy that sometimes is the odd man out, and we talk about this, is Armon Franklin, and yet his greatest value is defensively. And that's really going to be needed with Justin Smith gone. You need another kind of versatile defender, even though he's more of a versatile wing defender than Justin Smith was. You know, he can really do some different things defensively, and so that's going to get him on the floor. So I just, with those guys and with some of the uncertainty around Jerome Hunter and his minutes, and just, you know, and wanting to keep Trace fresh and a lot of those things, I feel like Archie's going to play the three guards. And plus, they give you more shooting, you know, and Lander has the talent. Again, he could be a guy where you write his name in pen and he plays as many minutes as he can give you. Now, I don't want to put that pressure on him, and I think it would take him a while to get there, but that's the thing. I mean, you've got some talent, you've got some ability in that backcourt, and if you can, all those guys are capable shooters, or theoretically could be capable shooters, you know, if Armon can be more consistent, and if Rob can be a guy who gets more shots off the catch than off the bounce, you know, he's been a better shooter off the catch and should be able to do that with Lander. So if you can always have three shooters out there surrounding Trace, that's just going to help him out. So I think we're going to see a lot more three-guard lineups, and I think it'll probably be for the better.
I think one of the things that fans should be most excited about, and we talk about this every year, and in some years we look back and say that was ridiculous. They didn't really have 9 or 10 guys who could actually get on the floor and play. But this year, they don't have all the scholarships filled. But I don't look at one guy on this roster, and this includes the freshman, that doesn't have a chance to contribute in some way. There's been years in the past where we've thought this, and then we actually get into the season against good competition. I'm like, well, you know, you just got to play the 6 or 7 best guys and then hope you can get by with the other guys. But even, you know, going down the list of the freshmen, you look at Jordan Geronimo and just his body and his physicality and his athleticism, you think that, you know, maybe he can, even if it's small, you know, small amount of minutes, he can give you something. Anthony Leal, we know that he has a reputation as a shooter coming out of high school. He's Mr. Basketball at Bloomington South. He's been well coached. Maybe he doesn't come in right away and give you more than 4 or 5 minutes a game, but we think there's a chance that he can do something. And Trey Galloway, another guy who you look at and you say he's been well coached. He's the son of a coach. He's going to come in and play defense from day one. And so I just look up and down the roster, and I think you could tell from listening to Archie talk in late July that he was excited about this team. And coaches a lot of times will tell they love their team. And then, you know, they're just saying that because it's lip service and that's what they have to say. But I think in this case, there was genuine excitement from Archie Miller. And I think a big reason for that is he knows that at most positions, he has depth and he's going to have options to actually use the bench as a motivator. Whereas in the past, you know, based on injuries and maybe just not having enough of his guys in there, that wasn't the case.
And I mean, just look at it. You know, Devontae Green had some great moments. Justin Smith had some great moments. Like, I don't think we needed to be inside of the locker room to know that those two guys and Archie probably didn't get along great all the time or didn't see eye to eye all the time, you know? And so, to the extent that they were headaches for Archie, and I just mean that in the sense of kind of clashing with the coach in terms of what he wants and their vision for how they were going to play, that's gone. And, you know, Deron Davis, I think everybody loves Deron Davis because he's got a great personality, but you didn't really know when you could count on him just from a health and kind of a conditioning perspective. And so there was some uncertainty there. And so I think when you remove those three guys and now you move forward as a coach with guys, you know, outside of Al Durham, he didn't recruit Al Durham originally, but he's now coached him for 3 years. You know, now all guys that you've kind of picked and, you know, theoretically have a better connection with. Yeah. I think, you know, that's probably going to have Archie be a little bit more relaxed and maybe more excited about coaching this roster. Cause you know, you probably have everybody going in the same direction for the first time since he's been here, really. And that's part of why the fourth year is kind of the year where the expectations ratchet up, is because like all the excuses are gone now. Like if this season doesn't go well, no Indiana fans are going to put it at Al Durham's feet. You know what I mean? Like it's not going to be Al Durham's fault. Like this is now Archie's team. He owns completely the results. And you can say, you know, he's owned the results the last 3 years and all of that stuff. And, you know, maybe fans have been too patient, whatever. You know, I guess that's just a personal preference for how people want to do it. But everybody's on the same page now. Like, Archie owns the results this year. This is his team. Let's go. Let's see what it is. And, you know, I would want a coach who gets excited about that, about the pressure, but also the possibility.
You kind of teed up the next question I wanted to ask you, and that's expectations for this season, because the Big Ten is looking on paper to be a monster once again. We didn't actually get to see last spring how many teams would have made the tournament, but it would have been, I mean, 9 or 10. You know, I feel
with like Geo Baker coming back, All American Geo Baker.
You know? Let's not get into that. That could be a 30-minute episode on its own. We will actually.
And I like Geo Baker too.
You know? Actually, Dylan and I have started the list, and I can tell you that Geo Baker is not in the top 10. So sorry, Geo, and sorry, Andy Katz, but that was. I mean, Jared, was that ridiculous?
Top 10 nationally.
Was it ridiculous?
It was. Look, okay. You know what? I don't know. I don't want to rain on the parade too much because Geo Baker's actually a likable player, and you know Rutgers is kind of everybody's darling. But man, top 10 returning player in the country.
If he's a top 10 player in college basketball,
higher than Trace.
It's not a good year in college basketball. Okay, but that all that aside, we're talking. You know, the Big Ten. You know, I think I had Indiana 6th or 7th in my power rankings that I recently released after the draft deadline, and people were kind of in the comments and things. I got feedback on it. You know, if they're that low, then Archie's not getting the job done. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, well, there's 6 or 7 teams in this league that have a chance to be really good, and there might be even more than that. So I don't necessarily think that just because you're 6th in the Big Ten, and Jeff Goodman, this is another thing he talked about, you know, don't look at necessarily where they are in the Big Ten as an indictment of how good they are as a team, because the league could be really good. I mean, do you think this is a year where, just from an optics perspective, because he hasn't done this yet, they have to at least finish in the top half of the league, right? You're a 14 team league. I feel like he's got to at least finish in the top half.
Oh my goodness. Fair? Oh, I mean, that's fair. I think it might even need to be higher. Here's the way I look at it. I think there's two different like viewpoints here. There's the viewpoint of what's the expectation and where should Indiana be? And then there's the viewpoint of, okay, when I actually kind of stack up and look at the teams, what do I predict will happen? Because I think it's fair, like the way that you look at it, you could definitely make an argument that Indiana kind of projects to be 6th or 7th best in the Big Ten. Yeah, now I haven't gone through it, but you could make that argument, you know, given that Luka Garza is back and what Illinois has coming back and Michigan State being Michigan State, the young guys that Michigan has coming in. Yeah, well, yeah, obviously Wisconsin, who's probably your favorite. So, I mean, that right there, you know, you just named a lot of teams that's going to be tough for Indiana to go above. But here's the thing. Like, it's year 4, you know? So whether I predict Indiana to be 6th or 7th, I think it is fair, and I think what most Indiana fans are going to viscerally expect is we should be in the hunt this year. Like, I don't know if that means that we finish 3rd or 5th, but, like, we should be in the conversation for the Big Ten title up until the last week of the season. You know, we can't be an afterthought again. You know, and I don't think there's going to be any way to explain that away, because Brad Underwood's in his 3rd season. You know, okay, so he's got Io and Kofi coming back. That's great. All right, but we have Trace coming back. We have players too. You know, and Chris Holtman is in his 3rd year or 4th year, and these are the guys that Archie's going to get compared to. Yeah, 4th. You know, and he's made NCAA tournaments and has had teams compete for a Big Ten title. So, like, whether you project Indiana 6th or 7th or not, the fact is, for 3 years, Indiana has been at or below expectations. So it is perfectly fair to say, you know what? It's time to perform maybe above expectations. So I just think, you know, we probably have to separate those two views of, okay, when you actually look at it, if you were going to bet money on where Indiana would be, you know, or put your reputation online with predictions, what would you put? And then what's fair for fans to expect? And I think it's perfectly fair for fans to expect maybe we're better than Michigan State this year. Maybe we finish higher than Iowa this year because we can actually defend somebody. You know, like, just because they have Luka Garza back doesn't mean that it's obvious that they're better and that it should be excused if Archie falls below Fran McCaffrey in the standings, because that's just not my vision for IU basketball. You know what I mean? And I think that's how a lot of fans are going to view it, because I feel like, to a certain extent, when you actually look at the results, fans have been really patient with Archie. And I get some of it, you know, like, he got Romeo, the recruiting's been better. We've seen better defense. We've seen, you know, some more fundamental basketball in certain ways. So, like, some of the things fans didn't see under Tom Crean, they have seen under Archie. one important thing we did see under Tom Crean that we haven't seen under Archie is shooting. That'd be nice to see. But, you know, some of the other things stylistically fans have liked, recruiting fans have liked. So I think fans have been pretty patient. But I think that patience could turn pretty quickly this year with a 2 or 3 game losing streak. I think there's some latent, like, let's go. And that, I think the expectations are, I just think fans are going to want more this year. And if we're falling behind that and we're kind of in the middle of the pack and not really in the conversation, it's going to be like, man, this is year four and this is still where we are.
I think the only way that a 6th or 7th Big Ten finish is acceptable is if it's a year where there's just a ton of teams kind of in the mix and they're there via tiebreaker or one yeah. loss or something like that. But I think ultimately, and I've said this, and I think this is what ultimately the season needs to be judged on, is this is a year where you have to make the tournament and you have to make it comfortably with a seed that giving yourself a chance to advance. And by yes. what I mean by that is not in the first four, not an 11 seed, not a 10 seed, like, you know, 6 or 7 seed or higher, and like give yourself a chance where you're favored in the first game. And then you go to the second game and then anything can happen, because I don't think anybody can say for any team in any season, you know, outside of a few programs that have done this year in and year out, the Gonzagas of the world, the Kentuckys, Kansas recent years, you know, and even those programs have years where they don't advance, Duke, North Carolina. But I think ultimately what fans want to see from any coach is consistency in terms of making the tournament, giving yourself to a chance to advance, because you, anytime the tournament's played, we all can admit that, you know, usually after the first game, anything can happen. I mean, we saw a scenario a couple of years ago where Zion and Duke almost lost in the second round to Central Florida. We all understand that anything can happen. We've seen it happen with Indiana and Syracuse when Indiana was a 1 seed, but at least give yourself a chance to be in a position to move on. And I think that's, yeah. to me, more important than where it finished in the Big Ten.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think those are fair expectations. I think Indiana's got to be in the conversation for the Big Ten. I think Indiana needs to spend more weeks in the top 25 than out of it, you know, and I think they need to make the tournament comfortably. I think those are the bare minimums, really.
Yeah.
And I think disappointment, if the results aren't there, is going to be warranted. And I have to think Archie, you know, being around the block as many times now as he has, even though he's still a young coach, I would imagine that he would accept all of those and understand that that's the... As he said, you know, you want to be in the neighborhood during his introductory press conference. Well, you know, we're Indiana. We like to think that we're still a blue blood. So at some point we need to have some blue blood expectations. And these aren't even those, you know, these are like stepping stones to that. And, you know, that's the other kind of feather that's been in his cap, is although the progress has been excruciatingly slow, there has been progress each season. Like, it has gotten a little bit better each season. And last year projected to end much better with, you know, making the tournament. So now maybe, you know, instead of taking kind of a quarter step forward each season, let's take like 2 steps or a big leap forward. You know, at some point that would be nice.
So to close the episode, Jared, I'm looking at the standings right now for the American League Central. And as we record this at 3:51 Eastern time on Saturday, September 5th, the Chicago White Sox are in first place. They're not tied for first place. They're actually in first place, a game or a half game ahead of Cleveland and Minnesota. I know you told me before that you've been following, you haven't been watching. I have been watching most games, although I don't really make it past the 6th or 7th inning because these 8 o'clock starts for me, and having kids and having to get them up and everything in the morning. I can't stay up that late. But after what we've gone through in recent years as White Sox fans, through all the rebuilding, through trading Tatis Jr. to Ryan Phillips and never hearing the end of it on Twitter. How does it feel to be in first place here in early September?
Feels good, man. It feels really good. I was just thinking how much Ed Farmer would have loved watching this team play, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's fun. It's really fun watching a young team kind of gel and come together, you know? And obviously, look, not all the moves that Rick Hahn has made have been perfect. The Tatis James Shields trade, you know, being chief among them. But man, the other ones are looking good. It's such an exciting offense. I was told Tim Anderson was due to regress because of his batting average on balls in play. Looks like he's still hitting the heck out of the ball. So it's fun. I am hoping, Ryan and I have talked about this, I would love to see a White Sox Padres World Series. Let's just go. You know, let's do it.
I just want to get into the playoffs and have a, like I said, have a chance. Like,
yeah, have a chance.
IU basketball, right? Get in the tournament and have a chance to advance. And the other thing about this is, if things go our way and there is, you know, a little bit of advancement with the White Sox in the playoffs, this could actually hold us over until the start of college basketball season. Because
that's true.
We all know that there's not going to be Big Ten football anytime soon. So we could have baseball. We could obviously we have the NBA playoffs going on. There's still some IU guys alive there. Eric Gordon, Romeo is obviously playing with Boston. OG Anunoby. There may be a couple others.
OG's so good. That
shot the other night. And then what about the press conference afterward? He basically was just, he was stoic walking off the floor. Like it was no big deal. And then his press conference was, I don't shoot to miss. So he wasn't surprised that he made it. That he's a one of a kind guy.
He's just a legend, man. He is one of a kind is the only way that, you know, and you think about like how, you know, I mean, he's a Hoosier and we love OG so much. But like when you actually start to think back to his college career, there were some just huge moments, but man, there were just too few of them, you know, because obviously he didn't play a ton early in his freshman year and then made such a huge splash when he did. And then he got hurt midway through his sophomore year. But even in just the short time he played at IU, he had so many moments that people, you know, still remember and still talk about. And now to see what he's doing in the NBA is awesome.
I mean, him and Thomas and Juwan on that 2015-16, that team, that really kind of put that team over the hump. I mean, in a lot of ways, that season was more fun to watch than the 2012-13 season, because 2012-13, it seemed like there was just so much pressure all the time. In 2015-16, there was pressure at the beginning, and then after what happened in Maui, basically there was no pressure because everyone was just like, wow, the sky's falling, and then to see where that team went. And OG and Juwan, obviously Juwan had, you know, hats off to him too. I mean, guy was the first undrafted rookie to ever start an NBA playoff game. How about that? That's going to be
it's amazing.
More trivia question someday. So that's good to see that for him. So Jared, we don't know exactly when you'll be back again on Podcast on the Brink.
But hey, before you close this though, can I ask you a question? Can I ask you for an update on recruiting? Because this is the one thing I really haven't been following. And I saw something that like Trey Kaufman has taken visits, like family visits to Virginia and North Carolina. And then I saw the rankings come out that Logan Duncombe is like a top 70 player now. And then Kenya Hunter's hired and you get these slew of offers, including like a top 5 guard. Can you just give me can you get me up to date? And by way of doing that, get the listeners up to date on what's happening in recruiting.
Yeah, sure. Trey Kaufman is actually at Virginia right now. He posted a picture today on Instagram. He had his mask on, and I think he was on campus there. The important caveat with these visits that he's taking is they're not official visits. There's no interaction with basketball staff. There's no touring of basketball facilities. I don't even know if there's touring of academic buildings, because it's not a visit that's anyway endorsed by the university, because we're in the middle of a dead period and guys can't take visits. But
he's just visiting with his family to like check out the city.
Right. I mean, they can't like the NCAA can't say, hey, you can't visit. It's just more or less them saying to Virginia and North Carolina, you can't have these guys on campus under, you know, you can't invite them, but they can go do whatever they want. It's a, you know, public university, so they can go tour the campus all they want. So I think a lot of that is Trey Kaufman is coming to the realization that there's not going to be official visits or anything like that anytime soon. He's built relationships with these schools. He wanted to go actually, you know, put his feet on the ground at those campuses, because if he's serious about either school, obviously you don't want to commit somewhere sight unseen. So that's where that stands. I wouldn't worry about it too much if I'm an Indiana fan, because you want somebody who's done their due diligence. You want someone who's kind of been analytical about the process and gone through everything. So we'll see how that all shakes out. But I definitely think a fall decision is on the table with him now that he's gone ahead and taken these visits to both of those schools. I think that North Carolina wraps up on, like, he's going there after Virginia. So we'll know maybe next week. I don't know what exactly he would say, because it's not like Tony Bennett or Roy Williams blew him away on campus, because he was basically just walking around. But at least I get it, because you want to at least have a feeling of what it's like somewhere, right? If that's potentially where you're going to go. But with Logan Duncombe, I think there was such a limited summer, but when he did play this summer in that event where they played against Spieth Indy Heat, and he basically outplayed Caleb First in front of some people, and that opened some eyes, and he's still a little bit lower in the 24/7 composite rankings, but the actual 24/7 sports rankings, which I do put a lot of trust in because Brian Snow sees a lot of guys actually in person, watches a lot of film. I think he does a really good job, and he, along with, I think, Josh Gershon, and Evan Daniels has moved on there, but they have him in, I think, in the low 60s, so that's encouraging. I don't necessarily think that he's ever going to be a guy who dominates college basketball, but, you know, that's, you know, a really good pickup for Indiana, I feel like, and solidifying the backcourt for, you know, the 3 or 4 years to come. And he's definitely a player who's raised his stock over the summer. If
a poor man's Nate Reavers, perhaps. Pandemic.
Well, I think now that my new Wisconsin man crush is Micah Potter, you're going to be you're probably going to roll your eyes when you see where he might be in my top 25. But that
probably will high.
Yeah, so
I feel like the Wisconsin starting lineup should just be 6 through 10 on the Big Ten top 25, because, like, I don't know if any of those players are, like, in the top five.
Well, I don't think but... I refuse to rank Brad Davison. So
okay, well, you can get him out of there. All right, that's fine.
Okay, but in terms of other recruiting, I mean, everything else is pretty. I mean, obviously those offers. I think there was what, 5 or 6 offers that were put out in the last week.
Yeah, do you put any stock into those? I mean, especially now when guys can't visit, and I mean, it just kind of, like, let's wait and see. If
I mean, they're all 2022 offers. So I think what you have to hope is that you're able to kind of build a relationship with the guys that you really want from that group, and hope that maybe next spring or next summer, next fall, that you can actually start to get guys back on campus again. And I mean, it's not that Indiana is at a disadvantage more than anybody else. Everybody is in the same situation here, right? I mean, it's all Zoom recruiting. It's all phone recruiting at this point. So it's going to come down to whoever works those angles the best. It seems like from the recruits that I've talked to that Indiana does a really good job with those calls and doing virtual tours and things like that. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But I mean, I think the immediate focus for everybody is what happens with Trey Kaufman, right? I mean, I think he's kind of the big domino to fall in 2021, because they've already got Duncombe and you know, Lander was 2021, but reclassed, so he doesn't obviously count as a 2021 recruit. But I think they've got to get at least 2 more guys in this class, and we'll kind of see how it pans out. But it's not like you can see who's visiting where, or who's, you know, a lot of times you can, you know, by Hoosier Hysteria, you can tell who the big recruits are that they're targeting, because that's the guys they try to get on campus for an official visit during Hysteria. Well, I don't think there's going to be an event like that this year. Obviously, you know, Archie Miller said as recently as what, late July, that he expects the dead period to be extended through the end of the year.
Yeah.
So we'll, I guess we'll be, there's not going to be any Romeo Langford type announcement gatherings where 3,000 people are cramming into a gym at this point for an announcement. So we'll, no. I think be hearing a lot of announcements on Twitter and different things like that. But I think Indiana is well positioned right now with its recruiting. But I think a lot of eyes are on Trey Kaufman and what he decides to do, and that'll be the next big domino to kind of watch fall. But I'm excited to see just what Kenya Hunter's able to do. I mean, before he left UConn in earlier August, I think he got a top 50 kid from the DMV area to commit to Connecticut. So he can obviously, you know, bring in talent, but it may be the 2022 class and beyond before we actually see that that impact felt in Bloomington. So
cool. Thank you. I feel more up to date now.
Okay. So, yeah, like I said, we're not sure exactly when you'll be back with us, but I will be back in 2 weeks' time at some point with another episode of Podcast on the Brink. Thank you, Jared, for taking the time out of your schedule. I know things have been different for all of us since early March, but hopefully we're making progress in all this and getting back to normal at some point in the next 6 to 8 months, hopefully.
I hope so.
I don't know
so,
exactly
man.
How this is all going to take, but
I know.
I think we all feel a little bit more comfortable with where everything is and kind of adjusting to life as it is now. So hopefully, when things get back to normal, so to speak, we'll be able to get back to a little bit more normal schedule with Podcasts on the Brink and talking about IU basketball. But thank you for taking the time out to join us. And I will be back in a couple weeks' time with another episode of Podcasts on the Brink. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. Remember to join me and my co-hosts for more IU basketball talk at assemblycall.com and visit Alex over at insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana basketball. If you want to support Podcast on the Brink, here is the single best way to do it. Tell anyone you know who loves IU hoops about us and suggest that they subscribe. Podcast on the Brink can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are available. Tell your social media followers, email your friends, text your family members. For weekly discussion about IU basketball, they need to be subscribed to Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.